society itself has so much negativity around money that it's literally the thing that keeps us completely locked into the levels that we are, and we just don't know it. And there's the connotations that we're a bad person or that we might be crooked in some way. But when you wake somebody up to the idea that as they begin to earn more money, they become closer and closer to the realization of that psychologically in their mind. You have to take conscious control over their behavior so that they don't unconsciously sabotage themselves and bring themselves back down.
It's all a choice, yes. What prevents people from making the choice to have a more profitable business, to make more money?
It's fear of being judged. It's the fear of being judged by other people.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. David is back. Welcome, David. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
Last time, we were going to talk about the idea of financial set point. And this is something I talk with people about a lot. And so I'll put it to you. Describe financial set point. What is it? How do we shatter it and get to new levels?
Yeah. Okay. Let's do it. So this is an interesting concept that I worked on for a number of years. Let me just give a slight background on why this is important to me and why I began working on it and teaching people how to break through it. In 1993, I found myself stuck. And I think we talked about this the last time. I was on a forklift. I was a high school dropout. Couldn't seem to get past the income that I was making. And then in 30 days, I tripled my income. And with all the different experiences that were happening during that time, I could not get out of my head that this was not supposed to happen. Number one, I was like raised lower middle class. So nobody I knew was making $62,000 a year, right? And this is 93 now. The median income from the community that I came from, which was basically Chicago, for our class was about $20,000. People grew up, they were working class, they usually had a high school education, maybe a year of local college, and that would have been about it. And here I just blow right past them. And like, I'm focused on where I'm going, I'm trying to do a better job in the work that I was doing, and I keep thinking to myself, how is this possible? Like, how could this possibly happen? Anyway, I go on a period of studying for 7 years, and everything just keeps getting better and better and better. 7 years later, so I was working for a company where my income stayed the same, but I went from a truck driver in the company to being the person that was expanding the company across the country without any other further education, just doing a good job and learning on the job. But when I left there, my income started going up so rapidly, it blew my mind. I went from, so I was about $62,000 when I left there. When I started my company, I was at 50. A short period of time after that, it went from $50,000 a year to $50,000 a month, and then went over $1 million. And it was just like, bam, bam, just like that. I cannot tell you how this topic fascinated me. So I started, based on just what I knew, what I had learned, I started working with other business owners that were stuck. And I was working with them specifically on their belief system and what their internal dialogue was around money, around being wealthy, that type of thing. And I started putting pieces together as I was going. And then I got to this point where I recognized something, because I kept always going deeper into, but what is underneath this belief that they have that's causing them to have this problem? And one day I realized that there was something that happened at both ends, whether it was wealth or it was poverty, that the average person had an internal compass that would basically keep them in the middle, which I call a need line. That comes from the idea that most of us are raised with hearing, you don't need that. You're almost your whole life. Don't spend more than you need. You don't really need that. You could do without it. Do I really need that? To ask yourself as a question, but never, at least I didn't, and most of the people that I've met in my life, their parents didn't raise them with a conversation of, here's the life that you want for yourself. What's it going to cost to live that life? And then how do you learn the skills to create the income in order to live that life. Nobody I had ever met had ever had that conversation in their life. It was always, don't go beyond your means type of a thing. And there was a lot of negatives around earning a lot of money. So I run this group every morning that I work with these business owners. And one day I said, I want to show them how many negative ideas in their minds. So I started looking this up on the internet. And I found 77 negative statements that people hear about money in their childhood. It's not like somebody has to say, this is what the belief is. It's just that you hear it growing up. Some of them are repetitive, and we broke it down to about 50 solid different statements. I presented it to them, and I said, now tell me, how many positive things did you hear about money growing up? The most they could come up with was three things. And I was pointing out that all of their life, they have more information and more experience with the negatives around money than they do around the positives. At the heart of our being, we really want to be good people, right? I mean, I've worked with people all over the world, and I got to tell you that most of the people that you meet, they really want to do good in life. They want to be good. They don't want to hurt other people. They don't want to lie. They don't want to cheat. They don't want to steal. Of course, we know that those other individuals, they do exist out there, but the average person really wants to be a good person, and they're trying the best that they can in their life. Now, I had this experience at about 17 years old. I was dating a girl who was 3 years older than me. I used to open up a McDonald's every morning at 5 o'clock in the morning. I worked there for 4 years in my teenage years. And this girl that I was dating, she was a legal secretary. She worked downtown Chicago. So I was in the first suburb after you get across the Chicago line. So when I would get off work at around 11 o'clock, I would jump on the train. I would go downtown. We would have lunch together. And then I would usually hang around downtown till she got off a few hours later, and then we would go back home. And I became very fascinated with homeless people back in the day, because I'd be walking around and I would see these homeless people. And then I started thinking, I wonder what their life's like. I wonder what their story is, you know? And they would all have a sign saying something, or they'd have the coffee can out there. And one day I just sat back and I started watching them, and I was watching people approach them. And when I really started paying attention to people that were going to walk past them, the expressions and the behaviors really were astounding to me. You could see a person, the moment that they saw a homeless person, you'd instantly see what their response was going to be. Some people would cross the street. Some people would look the other way. Some people would start reaching around in their pockets to see if they could come up with some coins or something like that. Rarely would somebody come up to them and talk to them, but you'd have the people that would either ignore them or people that would drop money in the bucket and they would go on. So I started talking to some of these homeless folks, and I was finding out that some of them made more money than me on a daily basis, and a lot more money than me. And they never even asked for money. And I'm thinking to myself, isn't this nuts? The problem was that there was also this judgment around being homeless, right? Like, the average person does not think well of homeless people that actually do that, right? It's begging, you know, get a job, get a life, clean yourself up, all this. And I kept going, yeah, that's true. I agree with that. But the fact is, they're still making more money than you are. There's something going on here with this whole money thing. Okay, so back into the current day. I also recognized something else that was very interesting. And that was, my mentor said to me, you will always get what you need when you need it, right? When I was struggling over whether to start, walk away from my corporate job and to start my business, my biggest fear was I was married. I had 4 kids. I had the house, the car, the dog, the cat, you know, the whole thing. And I had to, you know, I was going to make a decision to walk away and start a business with no experience, no business experience, and I had to immediately make an income because I didn't have much of a savings like the average American. We spend most of our money. I had a little bit of a 401k. We had a meeting together in New Orleans, and he was speaking that day. We were actually talking in the back of house in the kitchen area, and he said to me, "What are you afraid of?" And I said, "I just don't know how I can do this. I've got, you know, my wife, my kids, blah, 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 blah." And he looked at me and he said, "Don't you realize you will always get whatever you need, whenever you need it?" And I had never heard that before. And I'm going, really? Like, I believed everything this guy told me up to this point. This was the first time I was like, I don't know that I believe that. And we had a longer conversation about it, but I went home And I started thinking to myself, is that true? And as I started to look at my life, I realized it was 100% true. And then I started looking at other people's lives and I started asking them. And I found out it was 100% true for them. What it caused me not to realize that it was true was that I was confusing want with need, meaning that we don't always get what we want, but we'll always get whatever it is that we need, and it's usually just in time. So I thought, okay, so on the bottom level, you'll have people that will not, like, we've all had problems in life, right? Most of us have had times where either we couldn't pay a bill on time or we were struggling to pay the bills, and yet we didn't allow ourselves to go all the way down to be destitute and homeless. I found out that that was mostly a choice by people that ended up being homeless. And then you'd have it on the opposite side, where I started working with a lot of salespeople, even with companies that had a lot of salespeople, and managers would be able to sit down and tell you exactly what their salespeople would write the next year as far as commissions. And they did the same thing every year. It didn't matter where they would start, they would always hit their high point. And like 1 to 2% of their super hitters would consistently try to best their best. But outside of that, they wouldn't. And it was like they would set a goal, they would go up, 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 up. And as soon as, the further they got away from their need line, something would change in their life or their circumstances, and they would come back down. And they would always blame it on something else. The people that were at the need line that started having problems, they would allow themselves to go down, but then something would happen and all of a sudden money would start coming back in and they would go up. So I thought, okay, there's an interesting pattern here. What is going on with this? And I said to myself, what happens at both of these extremes that psychologically we're avoiding? And after talking to a lot of individuals, what I found out was that the idea was that they would be seen as either being wealthy in whatever that term was for them and their family, or being broke and being destitute. That it's a psychological line. There's no definitive line, obviously, but it's a psychological line that exists in each one of us. And it's primarily generated and created by the family of origin that we came from and what was tolerable, right? You can earn a lot of money, but at some point other people are going to know, right? You're going to start spending it on something, right? So a little increase, maybe nobody knows. But when you start doubling, tripling your income, people are going to know. And it's the same thing with going broke. If you don't pay your light bill this month, you know, and a light company knows, but nobody else knows. But if it starts getting really bad, then relatives start getting the phone call. Hey, where's John? Have you seen John? Or they're coming to take your furniture out of your house, or they repossess your car. Other people begin to know. And the shame and the guilt on both ends of those is what corrects the behavior. Except the subconscious mind senses it way before we become consciously aware of it. And what generally happens is that something in our life, on the upward side of this, something in our life takes our focus off the goal. And it becomes the excuse for going down. And then we look for some kind of external representation of what the problem is, instead of realizing that it's an internal issue that's actually taking place. Now, on the downside of this, what's fascinating about it is that if a person has a problem in their life and their income drops, at first they're in fear, right? So they're in fear. And then they start to get to the point where they know if something doesn't change, they're going to have a severe consequence that they don't want to experience. So fear at that point literally begins to change to urgency. The moment that it changes to urgency, bam, just like that, money starts showing up. Whether they find 50 bucks in their winter coat from last year, or grandma sends them a birthday check, or they get an unexpected tax refund, whatever it is that it might be, they get a call, somebody wants a new client, you know, it always happens. And then we call it luck. Like, oh my God, I got so lucky. If that hadn't happened, we wouldn't have been able to pay this, or we'd have lost the car or whatever. And the person starts to go back up again. And these cycles run through humanity based on where we're raised and the culture of the society. And they're spot on every single time. I've never had somebody in a seminar, whenever I explain this, and I usually draw it out on a big chart and everything, and I'll ask, is there anybody that has not experienced this in their life? Raise your hand. Nobody raises their hand.
Right.
Everybody's experienced it. So I had an experience when I worked with Bob Proctor one time. He was doing a seminar. It was about 1,500 people in the room. And he said, he was trying to make a point because people would say, this isn't me, right? I want to be wealthy. I know I want to be wealthy. I don't have a problem with money. And he would go, okay. He said, everybody in this room, I want you to imagine something. You're going to have a big dinner party, and you're going to invite all your closest friends and all of your family to this party. And you're going to eat, drink, and you're having fun. About halfway through the party, you stand up, take a spoon or a knife, and tap out a glass, ding, 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 and say, everybody quiet for a moment. I have an announcement to make. I've decided to become unbelievably wealthy. And every time he would say this, the reaction would be just like everybody would laugh. I mean, it would be a loud laughter, a nervous laughter within the audience. I've done it myself now for 25 years, the same thing inside a summit. And it's always the same response because they instantly know what the people around them would be thinking, what would be saying, what their behavior would be like. And the truth is that society itself has so much negativity around money that it's literally the thing that keeps us completely locked into the levels that we are, and we just don't know it. And there's the connotations that we're a bad person, or that we might be crooked in some way, or that we might be arrogant, or we might be the wealthy jerk, or whatever it is that's going on. But when you wake somebody up to the idea that as they begin to earn more money, they become closer and closer to the realization of that psychologically in their mind, then so they have to take conscious control over their behavior so that they don't unconsciously sabotage themselves and bring themselves back down. And the way that we do that is that they become conscious of the increase based on what they're willing to follow through with within the spectrum of the goal that they want. So I never start a person with like doubling or tripling their income. I'll ask him this question. How much money do you need to make every month to pay your bills on time? And just write that number down. So say it's $5,000. Okay. So now how much would you be willing to increase your income per month where you won't go back on it? In other words, it becomes an absolute must. You will do whatever is necessary to make sure that it happens month after month after month. The key thing is that they will commit to that amount. I don't care if it's $5, but they have to commit to consciously increasing it month after month. After they do that a couple of times and they follow through and they raise it, all of a sudden they'll take off like a rocket in their mind because they're consciously reprogramming their mind, not only that they can do it and that it will happen, but what's actually controlling the behavior to begin with. Then we get into like sabotage strategies that people experience in this, and we break it all out for people so that they can understand. And then sometimes we do it on an individual basis. Like, what's your individual sabotage strategy, right? When you experience something go wrong, what was the first thing that you noticed? What happened? And they'll be like, I got in a fight with my spouse, or the cat got hit by a car, or my kids are having problems, or whatever. And then they'll realize that they used it as the perfect excuse to take their focus off what they needed to do. And then they went back down to the need line, because we don't need to make more. As long as we make enough to do it, that's fine. And then we create a toleration at that level. And that's the way most people live their life. They tolerate the things in life that they have, even though everybody has the potential to do more. Most people don't, because they live within the toleration spectrum of what they've been taught, and, you know, they don't want to be exposed as being something that other people would reject. So it's really a people problem. It's being seen. It has very little to do with money itself. It definitely has very little to do with skill set, but it has a lot to do with how other people view them, whether it's going up or going down. We will always adjust our behavior, because the biggest issue that we have with success is our need to be liked and our need for approval from other people. If we can break through that, we're designed to become whatever it is that we want. That's why we're here, to do that. We have all the capabilities. We have the intelligence. Every one of us has the intelligence. We have this master intellect that does nothing but create our life. And we create based on our decisions, which is the most it is the greatest power we have, the ability to choose. But we do it so unconsciously and benignly most of our life that we don't realize the enormity of the power that is behind our ability to choose. I mean, it'll allow you to create your life any way that you want it, whether you're choosing for good or you're choosing for bad. You're choosing, and then your life becomes an equation of that choice.
So that's interesting because it's all a choice, yes. But what prevents people from making the choice to live in a better home, to have a more profitable business, to make more money, to travel first class, whatever it is that for them will make them successful, will make them wealthy in their minds?
It's fear of being judged. It's the fear of being judged by other people.
Yeah. And it's fascinating. You know, we talk about this inside of our groups because people have to be prepared for this. When you start to make more money and people start to see things happening, like you said, it's funny the way you put it, but people will start to notice and then people start to act weird and then that impacts you. So then you go to the sabotage place. So if your financial, so kind of back to the financial set point. So if your set point's 100 grand, now you've gone up to 150, what happens in the brain to say, oh crap, I'm not comfortable here. This isn't right for me. And then, bam, it slams you right back down. I know it happened for me.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a set point like everybody does, but my goal was four times that amount.
Yeah.
But I kept coming back to that same level and I couldn't figure out what was going on. This episode is brought to you by Business Success Consulting Group. Does the way your business currently operate prevent you from scaling and growing? Is the most valuable knowledge in your organization held by just a handful of key personnel? Are you spending valuable time training your teams instead of running your business? Business Success Consulting Group understands the challenges of organizing while you grow, and they specialize in putting order into the chaos of an expanding organization. Adi and her team at BSCG work closely with you and your team to capture vital business knowledge, and then they help you develop, document, optimize, and implement systems and processes across every area of your organization, from sales and operations to marketing, human resources, and business development. Adi and her team have decades of experience and will help you empower your teams to function effectively with reproducible results that will set your business up for continual success and expansion. Schedule your free consultation today by calling or texting 503-662-2911.
It's an ancient problem within the human biological structure. The reason that the capability for that kind of sabotage is there stems from childhood, specifically infancy, when we absolutely had to have a parent to take care of us to meet our needs, or we would literally die. So the subconscious mind is designed in a way where it develops based on pattern recognition. If it's getting the needs met, it keeps doing the same thing over and over again. However, if the needs are not met, or there's a certain level of inconsistency within that early relationship, then the child begins to try to do different things in order to get the parent's attention to get the needs met. Instead of reaching an age where the parents go, okay, we need to find out what is the uniqueness of our children and help bring that out and develop that child, and literally help them separate from us and become their own person. That rarely actually happens.
Right.
As a child begins to pull away from mom and dad and to search for their own uniqueness, if they go outside of the bounds of normality for the parents quickly bring them back in to whatever that narrow view of life is. So
whether you see it or not.
Whether you see it or not, that's absolutely right. Correct. Because the subconscious mind is controlling the perception, right, and then reacting behaviorally.
Yeah. I didn't see it for a long time. Yeah.
Oh, me either. Yeah. I know. Yeah. So what it's connected to is death. And you could be 35, 45, 55, 65. And if you've never heard this or you don't know how it works, your subconscious mind will still connect it to death. In other words, if I do something that people will reject me for, it's a possibility I could die. There's another interesting phenomenon that's attached to this, and that's that for thousands of years, societies have had rituals for men and women to transfer from childhood to adulthood, right? You've seen this in the tribal communities and all the First Nation communities. Like, this goes back. It's biblical. Yeah. But we've gotten away from that over the last 150 years or so. And there's no line of demarcation really other than age-specific from when a child becomes an adult. So it's 18 or 21, you know, like to say, okay, you're an adult. But the subconscious mind still doesn't know that.
Yeah.
It does not know. There's been no transformation. There's been no process of transformation to say, okay, I am now the authority of my life. And being the authority of my life, I must learn the consequence of my decisions in order to become the person that I want to be. In fact, we actually encourage the opposite. And the opposite is to be a victim, to do what you're told. Don't rattle the system too much. And the subconscious mind never gets the message that mom and dad are not the authority anymore. So it's hard to notice it because rarely does a person make decisions outside of the spectrum of what they think would be okay for mom and dad, even if they're rebellious, because there's a center point. If you're rebelling, what are you rebelling from? It's what mom and dad were to you. So you need that point of relationship in order to decide to do something else. So they're still controlling the decision. It just appears that you're doing something different, but you still won't go beyond a certain level. And that level is different for every person, and it gets adjusted in a certain way depending on experience and what it is that you're told. But it's also in society. It's in our literature. It's in our music. It is crazy everywhere, and we see another thing that helps supports this, especially here in the United States. We love to cheer somebody going up, but the second they screw up, we just tear them to shreds. We can't wait. We're like vultures just ripping the flesh off the people as they come crumbling down, right? It's like we set people up for failure, and some people never recover from that because everybody makes mistakes. There is nobody that's perfect. And then, of course, we associate every other behavior and mistake to money itself, right? You know, they're a drug addict because they were rich, or they had infidelity in their life because that's what happens when you're rich. I remember the movie Tombstone?
Yes.
Right? Okay, I love
great
that
movie.
When Kurt Russell gets off the train in Tombstone, the sheriff comes up to him. Well, whatever town he was in, the sheriff comes up to him and he tries to have a conversation with him. He goes, "Sheriff, I'm not interested." The sheriff goes, "Well, wait, let me tell you." He says, "I'm telling you, I'm not interested." He said, "I did my time. I'm done." He says, "Oh, so you're here to make your fortune, huh?" And he goes, "Well, let me give you some advice. I've never seen a rich man not feel guilty." And Kurt Russell goes, "I'm already guilty. I might as well have the money."
Yeah, nice.
Right? So it's in everything. We learn it early, and then it's reinforced. You have to have a financially positive parents in order to not have this. And there are people that don't have the issue growing up, but most of the world does.
Most of the world does. So I just one comment, and then I'm going to ask you about strategies. But this stuff is really deep. Like, yeah, you went really, really, really deep there. And I think one of the things for people to recognize, and we talk about it a lot here, is I always say, I think you have to work harder on yourself than you do on your business. This was from Jim Rohn. Jim Rohn said that.
Yes,
work harder on yourself than you do on your business. And it's because of this, because we have to uncover what these things are that are holding us back from creating the life that we want. Because you're absolutely right. We get to choose who we want to be, what we want our life to be, what we do, what we have. It's really up to us. And I don't think a lot of us recognize, or a lot of people recognize, that they have that power. And so because they're battling against all of this stuff that's inside of them. So what are some strategies for overcoming these things? So where the sabotage comes in, where you're in a comfort zone. So I'm making whatever, 100 grand a year, 200, what, the number doesn't matter. I'm making this much. I want to go to the next level, but I'm stuck. This is my set point, my financial set point. How do I break through that and go to that next level? What are some of the strategies there that you teach and that you help your clients overcome?
So if we go back just a couple of hundred years and we look at tribal communities all over the world, one of the interesting things that they do as rites of passage in life is that they take the child and they imprint in that child's mind who they're going to be as a person in their life. And then they take them through the doing of becoming that person. We don't do that anymore. You and I, our parents, most likely our grandparents, and maybe even further back, we've been taught doing since the moment that we were born. And then the doing leads to the becoming. So the first thing is that strategy has to be reversed, because you can never do enough to become the person that you don't think that you are. That's very important to know.
Okay. Say that again. Say that again.
You could never do enough to become the person that you don't think that you are, right? And that's the path that most people are on. That's why people are frustrated. They have their disillusion with life. They're not fulfilled. That's where all the problems come from. The first place that I work with people is, who do you want to be as a person, right? We can look at what you think that you would like as some kind of a vision of where you want to go, but then who do you want to be as a person? And we get that sorted out first. Then we move into the doing. But the idea is that it should be, do, have. You have to be this person and then do the things that person would do, and then you will have those things. So when we're talking about money, it starts off from the idea that the beliefs around money have got to change internally inside of yourself. And I put people through a very rigorous process. I have them do two things. And this is for only people that are really serious about getting out of the bondage of the psychological aspect that there's not enough in life. Remember, so there's two kinds of buying people. Let me just preface this. You've got people that will spend their whole life, their number one value is how much I can save when I buy something.
Yeah.
The quality is secondary, right? And for business people, those are the worst clients you could ever possibly have.
That's right.
In your life, the worst. And then you have people that have a higher consciousness around money and the value of what they're purchasing, and they're more concerned about the value. They're conscious about the money, but they're more concerned about the value. They're willing to pay more in order to have better or the best, okay? All right. So what people don't realize is the psychological attachment that they actually have to money. So I'll do two things with them. And anybody can do this. You don't need me to take you through this to do it. You could do it on your own. Take $3,000 out of the bank in $100 bills or whatever you have that you can do, right? Even if you have $500 in $100 bills. And your job is to, as you walk down the street, occasionally give one of those $100 bills to a person that you don't know for no reason whatsoever and just say, have a blessed day and walk away. And to continue that exercise until you can do it with no emotional attachment to the giving. Because what we think is not giving, it's trading. And that's the way most of us approach life when it comes to money and work. We're trading. We're not actually giving. And you will never be your best if you're not giving. You will always only rise to the level of what you need to trade in order to get your need met. So you're not becoming the person that you want to be. You're still living at a survival level no matter what the number is. That's why you'll find some unconscious rich people that are just miserable as hell because they're still living within that survival. And there is never enough because they're always thinking, what if this goes away? You know? And then the other one is this. I think everybody should have the experience of being able to go out on the street and have somebody give them money just because they asked with no reason attached to it whatsoever. So I will take groups of people out in public areas. We started doing this back in around 2007, and I would do this big...
I was at one of them, and I don't know if I ever told you my experience, but go on.
Yeah, so experience...
It's bringing up a little PTSD for me, but go on.
Okay, Experience the Reality of Success was the seminar.
Yep.
And we would have 200-300 people go out on the street over a 3.5-day period of time, and their job was to go out and see if they could get people to give them money for no reason whatsoever. And there's no trick to it. It's just you walk up to a person and you say,
Wait.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, before you give away the answer, I'm going to give you guys my experience with this. And this is part of the reason why in the other episode I said I was angry with him for a while. Okay, so we were in Vegas for this. We went to it was probably, I don't know, 2007. This is when we were like, really broke. And we went to your thing in Vegas and you sent us out and you didn't give us the key. You didn't tell us how to do it. You just told us, go and get $1,000. That was the number.
Yeah.
Go out and get $1,000. Now, first off, that's wow. That was a big number. $1,000. Where am I going to get $1,000 from? And so we went out in groups and we went from hotel. We walked all flipping night.
Yeah.
And I blanked. I got $0. Zero. We go back into the room the next morning. And I think you told us kind of, okay, but this is how you do it. And you sent some of us, the ones that were blanked, back out again. Mm-hmm. And I think when I went back out again, I think I came back with like $5. That was like the most I could do. Do you know what is interesting? What happened? I ran into somebody, I think it was at the Mirage, that I know very well, that had probably thousands of dollars in his pocket. And all I had to do was ask him, hey, I need $1,000. He probably would have given it to me like that.
Yeah.
But I didn't ask him. It took, by the way, I didn't figure this out until later, maybe a year or two later. I'm like, son of a bitch, hold on.
Yeah.
Tony showed up out of nowhere. Out of nowhere, the solution showed up. And it goes back to what we were talking about in the last episode,
yeah,
where we were talking about the law of polarity. If the desire is there, the means by which to get it, to achieve it, has to be around you. Guess what? It showed up. And in my mind, I go, whoa, it blew my mind. I never shared this with you because, I don't know, whatever, we had moved on at that point. It was 2 years later, but it was incredible. But that day, I didn't get it. So now with my story, and I don't know if that helps anything. I think that's more for your entertainment than anything else.
That's a great story.
It's a great story, right? I mean, it was right there. I could have gotten the money and I could have had fun the rest of the night, gone to bed, showed up in the morning and said, David, I'm one of the two people that got $1,000. But I didn't see it back then because my inside. So I thought about that. Well, why wouldn't I have asked him? I was embarrassed. I was afraid. I was afraid of what he was going to think of me. I was afraid of him saying no. I was of all kinds of shit, you know, all of this stuff, embarrassment and fear and all of this stuff. And all I had to do, like today, you send me out to get $1,000. It'll be done in 20 minutes. I'll get the money, you know, because I know it'll show up. I know it'll show up. But back then I didn't. So anyway, so you send people out in the streets to get money. What's the secret and why is the exercise so important?
Yeah, the reason the exercise is so important is because when I was thinking this up as part of the seminar, I was thinking if I could get people to experience their real relationship with money, not metaphorically, because I can do that in a seminar room. I can give you a metaphorical experience or we could do it together, but that's not reality. So I thought, how could I do that? And I'll never forget, I was coming from the airport and we were in a taxi and I was with the guy that was working for me and I was telling him my idea. And I said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to send him out on the street. We're going to have him ask for money. He goes, he said, that's the craziest thing I ever heard of. Nobody would ever give them money.
Yeah.
I said, oh, they absolutely will. And him and his girlfriend are in the backseat. They're going, no, they won't. And I said, I looked at the cab driver and I said, sir, what would it take for you to give me $20 and be happy doing it? And he goes, I guess just asking. I said, okay, so I'm asking, will you give me $20? He reached in his pocket, the cab driver, and he handed me $20. I then proceeded to take them up and down the strip for about 4 hours, and it was just money after money after money. And they were like, I cannot believe this. I mean, it was just, it took them out of their paradigm completely. You will never understand your relationship until you do these two exercises. To feel what you're experiencing on the inside of you as you start to approach the exercise, to see what kind of person you actually attract to have the exercise with is a big part of this.
Yeah.
And then the reason we used to not tell you is because we wanted you to see what your natural approach would be first, which says a lot about how you're programmed, right? But then we would say, okay, so here's what we want you to say when you go out there. You walk up to somebody and you say, excuse me, I have a question for you. We're doing an exercise. What would it take for you to give me $20 or whatever the amount is and just be happy about doing it, right? And that's all you have to say to them. Now, they'll respond like, you mean for nothing? You mean just, right, like to just give you $20? And the answer is yes, that's exactly. And to be totally calm and totally in your confidence, very approachable when you do it. And when you do that, and when you can get to that point, you could do it all day long and people will hand you money.
Yeah.
I just did one a month ago here in Charlotte, and we took about 30 people out on the street. And there's different levels to this that I take people through that we don't have time to go through today.
Yeah.
But this one guy, Sean, went out and he did it, and the guy handed him $100. He asked for 20, and the guy handed him 100. He's like, yeah, whatever you need. And he comes back to me and he goes, I can't believe this. He goes, the guy, he said, I didn't even ask for 100. The guy gave me 100, right? So it has everything to do with who you're being, not what you're doing. We do the exercise to expose who you're being, because you do that and you have to confront that, right? And then I can help a person adjust and tell them all the different things that they need to do to start to change that once we have the experience. But the idea is that you should be able to go out and do it without having any emotional charge for asking for the money, and you should be able to do it with giving the money away without any emotional charge. And the two things that really make that so difficult for people is, number one, they really believe that there's not enough and that money is scarce. And when you tell them you got to give away $100 and you got to do it over and over again, they're like, are you out of your mind? Like, seriously, you're serious about this.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing that I ever heard of. And not only that, but feel good about doing it. Feel gracious about doing it. Again, for no reason whatsoever, to give for the sake of giving, okay? And then the other thing is to be able to generously and graciously receive. To ask a person for something and graciously be able to receive it without shame or embarrassment or judgment, and have a beautiful experience with another human being.
Yeah.
Once a person gets that, they generally will go to whatever heights they want to earn in their life, because they realize what money is, that it's just a tool, and that all the issues that they have with it have been passed down from ignorant people, basically.
I don't know if we can do this in 10 minutes, but let's try it. Okay.
Okay.
So you said earlier, and I love this, you will always get what you need when you need it. One of the things I watched you do, and I didn't, again, at the time, I didn't understand it. I get it now. But somebody would get up and they would say they wanted to buy, I'm trying to come up with the exact thing. Somebody wanted to buy like a piece of real estate, an investment or something like that. And they said, well, I don't have the money. And your response was, you don't need the money. You know this, right? Okay. And so at first I didn't get that. I get it now, is because you haven't made the decision and the commitment to have what it is that you want. So going now, we're talking a lot. We're doing this in the middle of November. So there's a lot of talk about your plans with our clients. What are your plans for next year, for 2024? And, you know, some people have some pretty big ambitions, and there's things that they need to do in order to get there. How does this fit into the planning or the wanting of, you know, I want my business to make $1 million next year?
It starts off with really beginning to understand that your greatest power in life is your ability to choose. Whether you consciously choose or you unconsciously choose, whether you choose something positive or you choose something negative, that is what you create your life by. And it's, you always have that power. The problem is that most of us use it in such a way that we never understand the power behind it, because we're making just dumb decisions all day long, same repetitive stuff. We're inside that matrix bubble. We don't see outside of it.
Yeah.
So the idea is, when somebody says, you know, I really want to buy this building or this car or start this business or whatever, but I can't because I don't have the money, they're following the same filter in life that they were taught, which is, you have to do things first in order to be able to get this. When the truth is, you have to make the decision first, because your mind doesn't need to find a way to do it until you decide you're going to do it. Your mind is ingenious, because the way to do everything is already here. Let's remember something. When human beings first showed up on this planet, they did not have a book that says, here's what everything is, here's what it means, and here's what it does. We learned that by experience. When you were born, you didn't know what anything was or what anything did. All the knowledge that you have about everything in your life came from your parents, your teachers, and the social environment that you were in. And that's how you have your experience, by what other people told you. So if you never learned anything outside of that experience, you're locked into what other people said your experience was. Now, everything that's been created by human beings was first an image in their mind. It was a desire in their heart. Once they made a decision that we needed something, they started to download the information into their consciousness as far as to how to do it. That's what we do. All the knowledge that ever was and ever will be is 100% present in all places at the same time. But if you're not tapping into that knowledge by asking the correct questions and placing the correct demand on the universe, you don't get it. What you get are subconscious answers about past experience. Yeah. Like, why am I so broke? Well, because you're stupid. That's why. Well, yeah. Why are you so broke? Because we don't have any money. Like, really dumb stuff. When you make a decision to do something new, you move into the creative side of your intellect and you start to engage your imagination. Your imagination begins to create an image or an idea of what it is that you desire. And if you hold that as being solid, right? You said commitment, right? Making a commitment. Then what happens is that the information, the knowledge, the ways, the people, the opportunities begin to show up for you to do everything that you want to do, including the money and the resources. It all begins to materialize for you. Now, you have to step into those opportunities and do the
important. That's the most important thing. Yeah.
Yes. It's not that somebody's going to come and, you know, say, welcome to your new home. You have to do the stuff that shows up, but it may start as out as an idea. Call this person, look online for this, do whatever. But it will come to you if you make the decision. Everything that you have in your life right now is because you made a decision, either positively or negatively, about something in your life, and that's how you got it.
Beautifully said.
Thanks.
So I think we wrap there because like we could keep going for hours more, and you got to come back again because there is even more stuff that this brought up that I'd love to talk more about with you.
Happy
but
to.
Thank you. I appreciate you being here. All right, everybody. So I hope you enjoyed this, I guess, part two of The Millions Within. David's book is called The Millions Within. Website is lifeisnowinc.com. We'll put it in the show notes if you want to learn more from David. David is just an amazing teacher. You taught me so much about all of this stuff. And I wish I learned it faster. You know, I'm a slow learner. I didn't get it. I wish I had gotten it way back when. Took me a little while, but I think I eventually got some of it, but I think I've got a long way to go. I think that's it. So thank you all for listening. Again, I hope this was super valuable. This is another episode. I say it a lot. David went really deep here, and I think you'll do yourself justice by going back and listening. No, don't just listen to it once. You'll probably have to go back a second time and to really get the nuance and how deep he went on some of this stuff. So until next time, everybody, this is Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast.
Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.